Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Stoppage Time on a Tuesday. We got a game tomorrow. We got a game Saturday. We've got the twos playing all week as well. We've got a win over Orlando in the back pocket for Atlanta United. It is a very, very busy time of the year, Mike.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me. I feel like Atlanta United's played very well for about a month and a half. But something happened on Friday where now everyone else is starting to catch on. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because it was nationally televised. I don't know if it's because the scoreline was what it was. It was a great performance, super performance by Atlanta United on Friday. But it's not out of form for them, I think, since the end of July. They've had a couple where maybe the scoreline was a little bit closer, but I thought they played just as well in Columbus. I thought they played just as well in D.C. Friday was good. But, yeah, I'm just a little bit surprised that now all of a sudden we're starting to see, I guess, some of the neutral soccer media starting to come around and say, oh, well, I mean, it looks like Atlanta United's finally turned it around. No, I disagree. I think they turned it around back in July, but it was a great performance on Friday. Just absolutely superb from Barco. I thought he had another really solid claim to be MLS Player of the Week. I'm sorry he didn't get that, but he did get Team of the Week. I thought Barco was great. I thought Hosatu really stood out, played very, very, very well. George Campbell, super cool for him to open his MLS goal scoring account. So a lot of positives off of which to build, but if now you're going to be considered to be one of the top teams in the league all of a sudden, this has got to be a six-point week. It's got to be a six-point week at home. You've got to get three tomorrow night against Cincinnati. Cincinnati playing a little bit better, coming off a win Saturday. It was against Toronto, but they are playing a little bit better. And then D.C., which is a team that I think you're very evenly matched against right now. And D.C. got a penalty to save a draw against Red Bulls this past week. I mean, they didn't look awesome, but they're going to play tomorrow night, and I think they're also playing Toronto. So you got to hold serve at home and get these 6 points at home. And if you do get these next 6 points at home, we know for sure you're going to finish the week above the playoff line because you're going to play one of the teams that's right there that you're chasing right now in D.C.
Yeah, it's a busy time. I mean, everything adds up. DC's hosting Chicago tomorrow.
Thank you. I thought it was Toronto for some reason.
Toronto's got Miami tonight. And Miami's a team you got to watch. I mean, this Eastern Conference is incredibly hectic right now. And you're not trying to scoreboard watch too much, but you have to keep up with what's going on around you. And right now, this week, Atlanta beats Orlando, a team that was ahead of them in the standings, that is probably going to be in the top four, but it's not a guarantee. Orlando's got some questions about them. They get Cincinnati, a team that is more than likely not going to the postseason, but they're coming in off of a win after three straight losses, so they've got a little bit of momentum. And then it's a dogfight with DC because it's a team that is right there in it. Now, they're coming in three losses in their last five. They beat Philadelphia, kind of bleh draw at Red Bull Arena against the Red Bulls. I'm very curious to see how they handle Chicago coming in, who Chicago's in a real desperation spot. They've got to pick up 3 points tomorrow night to really keep their playoff hopes alive. You're getting to that stage for some of the teams behind Atlanta, behind Miami, I think behind Columbus. Although the current run of form, I think Columbus has to feel like that a little bit, that they're getting into must-win territory as well because their form's been so dreadful. Atlanta's form, really along with Miami, has been the best in the Eastern Conference for a while. It's not just an overnight thing. And New England, but they're so far ahead, I'm not even really looking at them. They got everything under wraps. Everything second and down is up for grabs. It really is. And Atlanta, on form, is playing like a team that can compete with New England, with Nashville. Now, we saw the matchup with Nashville. They've got to learn from that. I think they did. I think we saw some differences in the way that they handled Orlando. And I think we're going to see some differences tomorrow, somewhat down to necessity and somewhat down to some returns. You're going to have Miles Robinson back. You're going to have George Bello potentially available for more than a second-half substitute appearance. You're going to have Joseph Martinez. You're not going to have Ronald Hernandez. You're not going to have Santiago Sosa. Big question about Amar Sadic because he missed out on Friday. You know, you've got questions. Ibadra not back yet. You know, like, what does it look like because of the changes that we'll see tomorrow? Because there's going to have to be. I mean, Miles Robinson's going back into the team. Joseph Martinez going back into the team. There's no real surprise about them being contending for playing time, but how do you incorporate them? Because that's the biggest question, is that balance and how you incorporate. We've had this, I think, really since Rob Valentino took over, and they went to that three center back alignment regularly, as opposed to only doing it when the opposition plays two up top under Gabriel Heinze. When it became three center backs regularly, we've wondered how the balance between attack and defending, and especially the midfield, works out. And it looked really good, really, really good, in my opinion, against Orlando, with the two holding midfielders and a front three. Well, last time I checked, and I broke out the abacus, Luis Araujo, Ezequiel Barco, Marcelino Moreno, Joseph Martinez adds up to four, not three. Right. So how does that fit? Don't know.
That's a good question. I don't want to take any of those four off the pitch. Mm-mm. So Pineda would have to problem solve a little bit. You know, another problem that he's going to have to solve tomorrow is defensively, what does your midfield look like? And this is where I think someone like Mo Adams could become really, really important tomorrow. And it's good timing that he's back and he's available now. Yeah. Because you're right, you're not going to have Sosa. Sadic is listed as out on the team's official injury report. So I don't know if there is any ambiguity about that, but Sosa's definitely out. Same with Ibarra. He's listed as out on the team's official injury report. So, you know, when you're looking at your traditional holding midfielders right now, it's pretty much Mo Adams and that's it.
Yeah.
Now, you've brought up the possibility of maybe using George Campbell potentially in that role if you had to.
We've seen him in garbage time situations there, but it's a different feel than playing a whole game. Outside of really working with him to develop that side of his game, I don't think it sets him up for success to put him into a spot like that. I think you've got better options that are probably safer. And frankly, you've got to think about George Campbell's long-term future. You don't want to mess up his progression, which has been really, really strong, as we saw on Friday night. You know, I don't want to get in his head too much, honestly, with having him play in a position that he's just not as familiar with.
Good point. Yeah, no, it's a really good point. But I also think playing with three center backs, gives you a little bit of cover and maybe allows you to not necessarily take a risk, but, well, yeah, kind of take a risk in the midfield where, say, if Mateus Ozatu was more of a holding midfielder, or if you did have Mo Adams who's coming back out of an injury situation, playing with those three center backs would give you a little bit more cover. It's going to be really curious. I think there's a lot of things that we're going to learn about Gonzalo Pineda this week. We have not yet seen him as the head coach with Atlanta United in a match compression situation, which they're going to be in this weekend when they play Saturday against DC. How much is he going to rotate, if at all? We're going to find out. We're going to find out what his philosophy is on that. You know, you mentioned up top, how do you handle Joseph Martinez? How do you fit him in to what really looked like a pretty good front line of forwards on Friday, where you had Araujo and Barco in kind of free roles with Moreno playing centrally? Now with Joseph in there, how does that work? And what is his involvement in the build-up play? So it's going to be very interesting. I think we're going to get a lot of answers about Pineda this week, but long story short, Atlanta United is still in a really, really good position right now, just with relative health. The guys who are out that we've mentioned should not be out too long. Sosa, of course, will be back on Saturday. He's suspended. And you still have more home matches than road matches coming down the stretch. And furthermore, you know, I would argue you've played your toughest match left on the schedule. And you did that on Friday, and you got a 3-0 win in doing that. You look at the remainder of the schedule, I mean, there are teams to be respected. There are difficult matches. Match at Toronto, even at Toronto. But match at Montreal, it's going to be difficult. You got to play pesky Red Bulls again. You got to play them on the road. That's not going to be easy. You got to play New York City. You got to play Miami, who's really hot right now. You'll play them at home.
Yep.
So, I mean, there are challenging games left on the schedule, but I think your most difficult fixtures now, you're two against New England, you're three against Orlando, you're three against Nashville. Fortunately, those are all in the rearview mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're able to look at games that, you know, no guarantees in this league at all, but games that you feel like, one, you're going to be favored in, and two, you're going to be able to compete and I think take advantage of some weaknesses in the opposition. And let's get into the virtual whiteboard just a little bit if you want here. Let's bring that up now and give it a shot in how this could look. So the red team here to your left on the screen is Atlanta United. Three center backs. Here, here, and here. Wing backs.
Jason, can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
We do not see it.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, I am sure.
Okay, well, that's not good.
Because now we have it. We have it.
Transitions. Sorry. That's how it goes. There, it's up there. Okay, three center backs. Here, and here, and here. Wing backs, left, right. Now, against Orlando, two holding midfielders, here and here, with the front three was pretty fluid. I think if you're going to draw it out, you want to see a number 10 behind two. I think at times against Orlando, it looked a little bit more like a front three and not as much definition of one behind two. That's going to be down to the personnel. You mentioned, what does it look like with Joseph up there? It will definitely look more defined with Joseph staying central, staying up high. When he drops, he drops, but he's not going to drift wide as much. We saw Araujo go wide. We saw Barco go wide. We saw Moreno go wide. You kind of want it to look like this. What's the difference from the way they were looking a little while ago with the three center backs? It's actually pretty big because they had one holding midfielder in that situation. And then a lot of times it looked like three and one. So that feels like not a big deal, right? I mean, when you look at it like that, it's not a big deal. Okay, let's take the opponent into consideration and let's go back to the Nashville game and what teams can do against you when you're like this. It's easy when you're in your own half like this because you're positioned, you can defend, all of that. Let's do it this way. So your forward's up high. Your three are here. This is against Nashville where they exploited space. How did they exploit it? Out very wide, and it was Alistair Johnston who came forward as a center back. They overloaded the right side. He's very wide. What does that mean? It means Bello has to go out here to the left. Okay, that opens up a gap here. Daniel Lovitz was the wing back. He came into this gap. This is where the difference between having one holding midfielder and having two is critical. Because if you have two, space is more easily handled when somebody comes in. With one, we saw what could happen there. And the other part of it was Hani Mukhtar dropped here, pulled the one holding midfielder out to him, even more space, runner in behind, late rotation to come out to Lovitz, who had cut inside, goal. Now, with two holding midfielders, this is where you're able to handle these situations better. All right, you play a team like Nashville or like somebody else who wants to create an overload and try to pull you apart. Okay? Wing back has to go out here and defend out against the touchline. That's fine. Player wants to come into this space. You've got a couple different ways to deal with it. If the center back goes, holding midfielder can drop in a little bit. Also, the sweeper, which a lot of times has been Alan Franco, can slide over, and it looks like you're defending kind of in a four-man back line a little bit. It's a lot easier to deal with than the situations that we saw with one holding midfielder. And without Sosa or Sadich in this game, I think it becomes really, really important to have the two because you want a little more backup. You know, frankly, you don't have a natural six by themselves to be that guy. You just don't. Mo Adams, I think, is a holding midfielder, a defensively-minded midfielder, but he's played mostly in a double pivot. Okay, if he's starting, give him the double pivot. Play Hosechi with him. Now, that does mean you're going to have to figure things out in the attack, and do you have to sacrifice somebody out of your front four? You don't want to, but do you have to? Or, in a situation like this, could you ask a Marcelino Moreno to be an eight? He's got it in him. That's what he played at Lanús a good bit when he tucked inside. Here in Atlanta, we've seen an attack-minded eight plenty of times wear that number 10 shirt, to be perfectly honest. It's a very important element to it as we bring us back up here. Balance. I feel like we're going to talk about this going into every game and coming out of every game. Balance is so important because as we get to this portion of the season, little mistakes, like we've seen this season, points have been dropped because of little mistakes. It becomes more glaring. Is it more points? No. But now you know what we're getting down to. You know how narrow the gap is. One mistake where you don't have that balance or you risk a little too much and you get caught in it could mean the difference between getting into the postseason and not. And I think for Atlanta, it could mean the difference between hosting a postseason game and not. So more balance equals more security and should equal more points.
Yeah. Can you maybe go back to like a base, I don't know, 5-3-2 each way on the whiteboard for a moment? Because I have a question about Cincinnati.
Okay.
And how they're going to play. So if you want to put up like a 3-5-2 each way.
Yeah, let me get Atlanta set up here in the red. And we'll keep it roughly in what I would describe the formation from Orlando. And well, let's not move the whole board. That's the thing. My Telestrator is not always the best here. We'll get this.
It's okay. I would guarantee it's better than most.
Eh, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll get it spaced out rather than all in the one half. So you get a little bit of a sense of where gaps can be. All right. And okay. Cincinnati, we're going to put in a 3-5-2 as well.
Yes.
They played. They played more of a 4-2-3-1, actually, against Toronto.
That's fine, too.
Okay, let's do that.
But make it a really compact 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, I think that's how they're going to try to do it. So
because that's what I kind of envision Cincinnati's going to try to do, that they're going to come in and they're probably going to put, you know, almost everyone behind the ball. So I'm wondering where Atlanta United is going to be able to maybe exploit a weakness or exploit a gap and be able to attack through that traffic, if that makes any sense.
So I think what Cincinnati will do, and they're in white, they're the circles in this scenario. Atlanta is the red X's. One thing is really simple when you look at it, and this will affect the way the game plays out. If Atlanta plays two forwards, two kind of central players up high, we know Joseph will be one. Is Barco, is Araujo the other one? Probably not Moreno, because he's probably going to be a little deeper because you want that two-way game from him. Okay, two on two. One thing Atlanta can do to exploit Cincinnati is if you see two on two in the back, Play direct. Let Joseph try to get in behind. Play it over the top. Get Araujo in a 1v1. Get Barco in a 1v1. 2v2, green light. Play direct. Play to them. Let them try to figure it out. All right. What does that mean on the Cincinnati part? Because I agree with you. I think Jaap Stam will probably come in and try to prevent that from happening. So those holding midfielders will drop deeper. The outside backs will probably tuck in, because what they'll want to do is make Atlanta play from a wide position. So they'll try to defend basically with six. Okay. You're Gonzalo Pineda. You see that. And it's like, oh, that's an invitation. I like that. All right, let's go. My number 10 steps up higher, wants to create this space. That's probably going to make these guys fold in a little bit more. And if it's Hosetu, if it's Adams, who would sit more, but if it's Hosetu, if it's Moreno, again, green light. All right, you're going to step up. One's probably still going to hold a little bit. You might get a little staggered with your two central midfielders in this scenario. There's no point in him staying back. If it's Hosetu, it's Moreno, it's Adams, and you've got cover behind you, there's no point in staying there and watching the game unfold. Go play. Go get involved. Okay, how do you try to open them up if they get more compact and try to make you play wide? Play wide. Jake Mulroney likes to play out here. Brooks Lennon, one of the best in the league on the crosses, he likes to play out here. Okay, now there's a lot of red in this area of the field. What does that mean for Cincinnati? Well, it means you're probably going to be asking one of Isaac Atanga, Luciano Acosta, Alvaro Barrial, Brenner's going to stay up high. One or two or all three of them to drop deeper. And this is where you get into match control, and this is where you get into trying to deal with these things. All right, you force Cincinnati back. Cool. Now what do? You've got your holding midfielder here. Probably going to stay a lot with Luciano Acosta because you got to worry about him on the break. Brenner's going to stay up high. They've got to have some kind of an outlet. But we get into this other conversation. You've got three center backs. They've got one forward. All right. How do you deal with that? George Campbell, Anton Walkes, Miles Robinson have all shown an ability and a willingness to jump up a little bit higher. Now, if you are Atlanta in this scenario, this is a little bit where the old lessons can help you. Notice how Cincinnati is set up here with their front four. And if you push them back, it's a right-sided player, and going from their lineup against Toronto, it's Barrial, it's Luciano Acosta centrally, it's Isaac Atanga on the left, and it's Brenner up high. Look at how Atlanta United is positioned. Man-to-man, 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 man-to-man. All right? That's your three center backs. One, two deep, three. That's your holding midfielder. You have your other central midfielder here who can drop in. What does that do for you potentially? It can allow you to free up Franco to be a sweeper like he has been. it can allow you to move the pieces around a little bit, still have your balance, and have one person free. Okay. You want to be conservative early on, have somebody free, have your two central midfielders sit a little bit, make sure they defend. That's cool. You still like this. Yeah, it's 5v6. But you're looking to create out of a 5v6, essentially, you're looking to create a 1v1. You want Luis Araujo running at Jeff Cameron. You're looking for that to distract where Joseph Martinez can loop in behind Vallecilla. You're looking to make Ronald Matarrita have to sit back here or come out wide to have to deal with Brooks Lennon. If Nick Haglund is playing as a right back, or if he's kind of a really tucked in here, then Jake Mulroney, George Bello are going to have a lot of time out here to have fun. You use the ball in these scenarios to open the other team up. Now, we saw Cincinnati last year in the MLS's back tournament drive Atlanta crazy by not being opened up. They were very regimented. They were very negative. They were very defensive.
It's very polite.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to give them credit. They followed the game plan, and they got the win.
Yeah.
But they want to attack more. Barrial, Acosta, Atanga, Brenner, they don't want to play that game. They want to get forward. They want to go and attack. Yuya Kubo, if he's a holding midfielder, as he was in this one, he doesn't want to sit. He wants to go. So they're going to naturally, because of the personnel, be more willing to open. You want to force that and create space. The other thing, and I think something that Atlanta did not have as much of last year, and they have even more now than any team in the league, 1v1 dribbling ability. If the space isn't open because the other team is condensed, break down your individual battle. Break them down. Luis Araujo running at players with his pace, with his quickness, with his dribbling ability. You beat the man in front of you, everything falls apart. There's no perfect defensive strategy. You can come in and be defensive, but if you don't win your individual battles, things start to break down, and then you have to exploit it. And I think Atlanta can do that because I don't think Cincinnati is as defensive-minded as they used to be. I think they have more players who want to play, and they're kind of stuck in between being good enough to actually play and following what Jaap Stam wants, which is generally more security.
Yeah. And Michael says, you know, he's not really afraid of Brenner and Acosta, and outside of those two and Madunian, and he can't really name anyone else on this Cincinnati team. I'd be really, really careful with that. I think Cincinnati's got a lot more quality than maybe their win-loss record would show this year. They've had a very, very unusual season in that they have not been very good at home for whatever reason. Saturday, in fact, was their first home win of the year. They've been respectable, though, on the road. Not great, but respectable. Jason and I have preached multiple times that the gap between 1st and 14th in the East and 1st and 27th in the league is really not that wide, and that there's more parity in this league than I think people either care to admit or that people will see. I mean, look at how hard it was to break down Toronto for Atlanta United, who was in great form when they beat Toronto 1-0 a couple weeks ago. And Toronto might end up winning the Wooden Spoon this year. So I'd be really, really careful. I have a lot of respect for this Cincinnati team. What I hope we don't see is Cincinnati playing the same way that they always have played when they come into Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which is very, very unambitious. And it's been occasionally an effective strategy. They got a draw in 2019 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, playing incredibly unambitious. Atlanta United did beat them at the Benz in 2020, very late in the year, kind of an unremarkable win, but they did beat them. But, you know, Cincinnati has, they've gotten some results against Atlanta United. They've gotten a win and two draws all time against Atlanta United. So I would imagine their approach is going to be very, very conservative, and sometimes that doesn't produce attractive soccer. But I do have respect for this team, and as Jason said, I think they have more quality now that would allow them to go out and be more ambitious against a team like Atlanta or one of the better teams in the league right now, because they are good enough to hang with those teams.
They have more ambition because of some of the personnel, but I don't disagree with Michael in that outside of, well, Michael says he's not scared by Brenner and Acosta. I'll disagree with that because I am scared of Acosta. I think
Acosta had two assists Saturday night, was nominated for MLS Player of the Week.
On the dribble, he can do what I've talked about from the Atlanta side. He can break you down. Acosta is a problem. You got to make sure he's accounted for at all times. Brenner is still adjusting to the league. It hasn't been a great year for him. He's talented. He's the forward. You have to, you know, not disrespect him by not worrying about him. But are you going to double team him constantly? Is he one of the best forwards in the league right now? No. You have to make sure he's accounted for. Yuya Kubo is one of the players who always worries me. He's a very talented two-way player. Doesn't get enough credit in this league. I don't think he's been quite as good as they expected when they brought him in, but he's very good. He's a hard-working guy who can defend, and he's good enough on the ball to hurt you when the time comes. Madunyanin, very good on the ball, but when he has to defend a lot, that's not his game at this point in his career. You want to make him have to run. He doesn't enjoy that very much. You just don't want him on the ball setting the table, and you don't want to give him set-piece opportunities. Matarita can hurt you when he gets forward. Cameron can hurt you on set-pieces. Vallecilla can hurt you on set-pieces. Haglund can absolutely hurt you on set-pieces. You do have to worry about that, which I think Atlanta always does. Atanga and Barrial are the ones who – talented players who want to go. It hasn't always worked for them. Atanga was pretty good against Toronto. Barrial, not so much. You've got to know what they're going to do, and I think we'll get a sense from the lineup. You know, we'll get a sense when we see that lineup how ambitious they will be. You know, could they turn to a five in the back, as was asked by Emilio Corsi? Sure. I mean, Haglund's a center back by trade. He's played right back for them lately, but it's a more conservative right back. You've got Zico Bailey, who came on as a sub. He could play as a right back. You've got Edgar Castillo, who can play on the right side, even though he's a lefty veteran. He could handle that. If you wanted to play a line of five, they've got the personnel to do it. But they don't have a lot to really change too much about their team from the bench. Florian Vallot is there now, and he's a player that I've always liked in this league. He's had horrible luck with injuries with the Red Bulls. Very good playmaker. If he's in, he can pick out a pass that can hurt you. And that's something they don't really have too much of in their team outside of Acosta. He's that guy. So you always have to come into a game like this and know what you can do to hurt the opposition and know what they can do to hurt you. And you've got to protect yourself against that. Acosta can hurt you. Brenner's a goal scorer. He's somebody you got to worry about. Set pieces you have to worry about. But you can open them up. This isn't a fast team from Cincinnati. It's kind of a team that deals with the vertical game and the crossing game really well. So how can you exploit their lack of pace? I think it's in the 1v1s. I think it's runs in behind. I think it's movement in general, which looked really good against Orlando, and you want to build on that.
And Shiva points out, look, they can come here and be happy with a scoreless draw. I mean, I don't think they'd be unhappy with a draw, but you also keep something in mind about Cincinnati is they need to start picking up some points. If they want to make the playoffs, they need some three-point nights. And, yeah, getting a road draw isn't going to kill them, but I don't think they can afford to come in here and be totally unambitious and play for a scoreless draw. That's not going to help them make up the ground that they need to make up right now. So we've seen these matches against teams like Cincinnati and Dallas and Colorado before, and you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach, like, oh, this is not going to be a really fun match to watch because they're difficult to break down. I honestly thought the match that they played up in Cincinnati back in July was one of the more wide-open matches that we've seen on the road for Atlanta United this year. Kenneth Vermeer, who's in health and safety protocols, probably not going to play tomorrow, basically stole that match for Cincinnati because Atlanta United was peppering him at the end. The one thing that Atlanta United did on that night in Cincinnati that they really don't want to do tomorrow is give up an opening goal. If they were to concede first, then that really gives Cincinnati the license to put everyone behind the ball, and then they become very, very difficult to break down. So that's not something you're going to want to see if you're Atlanta United tomorrow, but I just think the way Atlanta United has been playing since the end of July, it would be really against current form for them to get a negative result tomorrow night against a team like Cincinnati. I'd be really, really surprised.
Yeah, now that game in July, Cincinnati went a little bit different with their lineup. Castillo was on the left. Vallecilla and Cameron were the center backs. Joe Giao was the right back. Right. But an attack-minded right back. Caleb Stanko was in the team as a holding midfielder. He sat really deep. Madunyanin kind of floated in the holding midfield, but Stanko almost sat like a third center back at times to account for Giao really going and pushing the game. Acosta floated everywhere, and the front three of Atanga and Brenner and Barrial were pretty good. That was a more open Cincinnati team. I don't think they'll be that open on the road. Again, I think we'll get a sense from the lineup what they're going to do. If Haglund is playing as a right back, as we've seen lately for a while now, it's a little bit of a signal of intent that they're going to be careful in this game. And that's, I think they're going to be more than parking the bus and just negative and cynical. I think they're going to be careful, especially early.
Send us your questions and comments. Really, really do appreciate all the questions and comments. I know some of you are watching Champions League.
Champions
right
League
now.
Is nuts right now.
Yeah, I know. I know. And we can get into that.
Yeah.
I just got a notification on my phone. Norm MacDonald died. That's awful. I was a big fan of his.
Just saw that.
Very sad. Sorry. Anyhow, back to soccer. The Twos are also playing tomorrow. They play Charleston.
Yep.
Twos have had a little bit of a mini break here, but it's going to be busy for them as well. In fact, they're kind of mirroring the first team schedule a little bit. They're going to play on Wednesday and then again on Saturday. And these are home matches, both at the Fraction on Wednesday and Saturday. So what can we look ahead to this week and weekend with the Twos?
Charleston will drive you crazy because they are very vertical. Very defensive by posture, but they get out really, really well and puts you under pressure. They're 8-8-4 this year. So, I mean, they're very average. They're in fifth place. They're trying to get into a playoff spot. They're 6 points out in the Atlantic Division. On the two side, they are 2 points out, and they have a game in hand on OKC Energy, and you have an opportunity to make up some ground. The Twos have scored goals all year. They've got 37 goals this season. Now, they've had some games where they scored a bunch in one game, but defensively, they've struggled. They've given up 36. Now, some of that's to be understood because of the way that they want to play and the rotating nature of lineups. But I think what we've seen lately from them, they struggled a little bit on the road. And they went into, I thought, some tough places to play in Pittsburgh and Tulsa. And struggled in those games. But the last time out, they went to Indy and won 1-0 on a great goal from Aiden McFadden. That's a huge opportunity to build on. And that puts them back in the playoff race. At home, they've been very good. And this is an opportunity to deal with a team in Charleston who has had the Twos number. Last year, they played four times. And Charleston won three of them. The other was a draw. And the draw at home, I think it was, if I remember correctly, a very late equalizer for Charleston. Yeah, it was a 94th minute when there were supposed to be 3 minutes of stoppage time. Just leave that one alone so I don't get myself in trouble. It's a team that is kind of the antithesis of the way the Twos want to play. And I think Jack Collison probably has this one circled of, this is an opportunity for us to show our mentality, our philosophy, our way of playing, and show that it's the better way. And you got to get it done against a veteran team. Charleston, a bunch of guys who played at this level, it won't be easy tomorrow night for them.
So that's tomorrow night, ESPN Plus 7:30?
Yes,
right?
7:30.
So you can kind of stagger this a little bit. You can start with the first team at 7 o'clock, watch the first half. At halftime, switch to the Twos. Come back to the first team, watch the second half. And then when the full-time whistle goes at the bends, you can go back to ESPN Plus and finish out with the Twos, or you can watch everything in its entirety and then go back and watch on tape.
That's, and then on Saturday, you absolutely can stagger it, because Saturday, First team plays in the afternoon, and the twos play in the evening at 7:30. They play Tampa, who is also a very veteran-laden team. Some of the best games last season for the twos were against Tampa because it's two very distinct styles of play. And the twos battled with Tampa. I mean, they were great games, and it was a, I think, even younger twos team last year than it is this year. Two big measuring sticks for Atlanta United, too, and their playoff destiny is really in their own hands. And if they can get some points out of these two games, they'll be in a good spot.
Yeah. Speaking of Saturday, do you want to look ahead to DC a little bit? Because obviously we won't have a show between now and Saturday, but Atlanta United plays DC United Saturday afternoon. It'll be, they say 3:30, really closer to 4 o'clock. It's a Univision game at the Benz. And look, I thought these teams really fought and played a very, very entertaining match last month at DC with Atlanta United getting the road win on the late goal, which was a massive result for them. Atlanta United controlled that match in open play, though. I do know that DC generated some chances. I do know that Ola Kamara had some difficulty finishing in that match, but the DC goal came on a direct free kick by Jordi Reyna. Outside of that, Atlanta United, for the most part, had control in open play.
Oh, hold on a second, Mike. Young Boys with a late winner over Manchester United.
Oh, wow.
It came from Jordan Pefock of the U.S. Men's National Team. 95th minute.
He's scoring for someone, so that's good.
95th. Manchester United had a red card in the first half. Wan-Bissaka, which was absolutely deserved. Ronaldo scored in the 13th minute, but Young Boys got the win. And then in the other match, Sevilla and Red Bull Salzburg finished 1-1. Bunch of games starting at 3 o'clock. Probably a lot of people watching Barcelona and Bayern. Villarreal and Atalanta might be the hipster game of the 3 o'clock round. Should be a pretty good match. Lille and Wolfsburg. Chelsea should dominate over Zenit. Juventus at Malmo is maybe a potential upset special because Juve hasn't exactly looked great. But that's a big ask for Malmo from Sweden. And Dinamo Kiev and Benfica in this country anyway will probably have like 5 people watching because they'll be watching one of the other games.
Yeah, I saw someone on the Twitch pitch said that Aronson almost won it at the end for Red Bull Salzburg.
Yeah, yeah, good opportunity for Aronson to get time in that one. I'm just going to pull up his numbers really quick. Played the full 90, 24 of 26 on the pass, 92%. From a defensive perspective, he had 3 tackles, pretty involved, 6 of 12 on his ground duels, not bad. Good performance for them, and that's a good point for them on the road in Spain. That's a really good point for them on the road in Spain, actually. So DC United coming up this weekend, I thought Atlanta outplayed them in almost all facets in the last time out. The goal was a kind of a fluky one. DC's played in a 3-4-3 for a while with Gressel and Paredes as wingbacks. They're both problematic getting forward, so we talk about Cincinnati and what they can present. It's mostly central. What DC presents is mostly wide, where I think their most dangerous players are wide players bringing the ball in Paredes and Gressel. So you got to deal with that. You got to mark Ola Kamara. His movement is very, very good. You got to be careful with him. You know, what is the rest of the team around it? I don't know. Backline, I'm not really scared of when it comes to Birnbaum, Alfaro, Nahar. Nahar can get forward and hurt you. If Joseph Mora is back there, if they drop Russell Canales, Donovan Pines is really good, but he's really raw. Their last time out at Red Bull Arena, it was a 1-1. It was pretty bleh, to be honest. There wasn't a lot in it. They went with Alfaro, Birnbaum, and Pines at center back. Kimpin was still in goal for them at that point. Hamid, I think, is getting closer to a return. We'll see if he's in the lineup against Chicago. Paredes and Gressel were your wingbacks. And then it was 4-1, but it really listed as a 5-4-1. It played a little bit more like a 3-4-3. Jordi Reyna, Paul Areola in wide positions playing up high. Drew Skundrich and Russell Canales were the two central midfielders. I think Atlanta's advantage in that game is going to be central. I think Atlanta, if it's Moreno, Barco, a lot in the central channels, and Sosa returning for the DC game against Canales and Skundrich, for example, play centrally. Play through that that trio right there against Canales and Skundrich, and you'll be okay. What'll be interesting is against DC, your wing backs will probably have to play a little bit deeper to deal with Gressel and Paredes. Those are going to be the ones to be careful with.
Yeah, the Gressel-Bello duel on August, I almost forget the date now. I think it was 24th. I might be off by a day or two. Mm-hmm. End of August up at DC. Mm-hmm. I actually thought Gressel probably had the better of George that night, especially defensively, which was a little bit of a surprise. But I have to think now George's confidence has got to be in a different place. Having been through the World Cup qualifying cycle now, I thought George, you know, first of all, you got to tip your cap to him just for playing this past Friday. I thought that was a big ask of him to do that, and he did it and did it pretty well. But that's one that I'm zeroed in on for Saturday, assuming that nothing happens between now and then from a lineup rotation standpoint or an injury standpoint. I'm looking for George to do a lot better at home against Gressel than he did on the road.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. Going to have to, because we've seen it for years. Gressel can put in, you know, 10 crosses, connect on one, and that can result in the goal. I mean, that's what it comes down to. If you give him opportunities, he's probably going to hit one that scares you at some point. So you've got to deal with that. You can deny the ball being played out wide to him, and that's something Atlanta will have to do, but Bello is going to have to be a little bit better than he was in that game, because Ola Kamara had opportunities. He was very wasteful in front of goal, but he had opportunities in that game. And I think Atlanta will have to tighten up those elements. But attack-wise for Atlanta against DC defending, I feel like there were more goals on the table for Atlanta, and they're going to have to do that in this game. At home, they're going to be favored, they should be favored, and they need to take care of business against a team that they can jump, because they'll be able to jump them on Saturday. If, you know, everything goes the way we expect, they should be able to jump over them on Saturday.
There's anything you want us to touch on here in the last couple of minutes, send it in on the Twitch pitch. Do you want to talk about Leagues Cup at all?
Oh, I forgot that was even happening. That is happening tonight.
Seattle is happening in Leagues Cup, and it's tonight, I believe.
Yeah. Correct? Yeah. I forgot about that. I forgot about CONCACAF Champions League tomorrow with Philadelphia and Club America.
Yeah. You know, I was actually thinking about that a little. Atlanta United's kind of catching Philadelphia at a good time, it feels like. Philly has not been as good as they were earlier in the season. Now, you know, they're going through what I think is going to be a grinding two-leg series against Club America. I don't like their chances to go through, but you never know.
Well, they played one game. This is the second game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I don't think
enough time will have passed then.
Yeah,
right.
But you know, you are going to have to deal with the fallout from that. And I think we've seen Philly be in just a bit of a funk, honestly, for a while now. They haven't looked like the Philly that I expected. I mean, when you look at the East, and again, I think everything's in play from second on down. Nashville should have second on lock. They should. Orlando on 38. Well, we saw the question marks that popped up around Orlando's head on Friday night. They're not good enough defensively to be a top team. But can they be a good team? Yes. New York City, 3 losses out of 4. That's a bad look. And they lost to Nashville and they lost to New England. Can they bounce back? They're going to have to. Philly, 3 losses out of their last 5. DC, 3 losses out of their last 5. Both of them have only won one time out of their last 5. Montreal's been steady, but not spectacular, but they've been in better form than Philly and D.C. New York City, Philly, D.C., 4-5-6, 34 points, 32 points, 31 points. All in bad form. Bad form over the last 5. Atlanta, 4 wins out of their last 5. Miami, 4 wins out of their last 5, and a draw. It feels like 4-5-6-7-8-9 is where you're going to see the shakeup. I think Orlando's got just enough of a cushion and enough quality to hold on to third, but we'll have to see how they respond to their beatdown from Friday.
All right, let me ask you this, because I agree. I think your shakeup zone is correct. I really believe Atlanta and Miami are going to end the season in the playoffs, both of them. So who do you think drops below the line of that New York City, Philadelphia, Montreal, D.C. group? Who are the – I think it's two teams. I don't know if you agree. But if two of those teams drop out, who are they?
I mean, the easy answer is D.C. and Montreal because they're the bottom two. I'm not quite as convinced by Montreal dropping out. And this is where it gets hard for Atlanta and Miami because I could see only one dropping out. And you're going to have to pick up points. I mean, Atlanta or Miami is going to have to jump somebody like a Philly, maybe a New York City, to get ahead of it. And it's not going to be easy. Montreal has found a way to get results that the others haven't as much, like D.C. and Philly and New York. I think D.C. is going to fall out. I do. I don't think they're deep enough. I think the style of play is going to wear them down. I think they're going to fall out of a playoff spot. Philadelphia, I'm watching intently. I don't know how to feel about Philadelphia quite yet and how they hold on to this. And I'm really worried about New York City. I am. A lot of people, New York City's got talent. Tati Castellanos is one of the best strikers in this league. Sean Johnson's a great goalkeeper. I don't know. It feels like the wheels are coming off a little bit for New York City. So if I had to say right now, Atlanta gets in, Miami gets in, two get out, I'll go D.C. And today, and this might change, today it's Philadelphia.
And you think Columbus is dead? No chance for them?
I think they've got too far to go, and they're going to have to get people healthy really quickly, and they're going to have to fix a lot of, I think, bigger issues. Caleb Porter, I think, is hurting that team right now with the histrionics and the just behavior. I mean, Phil Neville had to call him out after the last game. Phil Neville's like, he's complaining the whole time. He's whining. He's crying. I don't think that hurt. I mean, I don't think that helps. I think it hurts that team. I think they get caught up in that stuff. And that's all got to change for them to fix this. I don't know where the goals come from for Columbus. You could say that about Miami, too. They've only scored 23 this season. But when you have Higuain up top, you've got somebody who can score goals. Columbus has Jossy Zardes. They've lost Kevin Molina, which was supposed to be kind of the new element to raise them up. He's done. Zellerion.
Miguel Berry.
Yeah, well, Miguel Berry's been really good. He's been keeping them around, at least.
Yeah, that's my point. Like, he might end up saving them.
I think they're too far to be saved. I just don't think they're quite good enough at this point. I mean, to look at it really quick. And hey, we'll go back to the issue that we've seen for them for a while now. Who's the center back partner for Jonathan Mensah? And in the last game against Miami, you didn't have Mensah. So you had Williams and you had Wormhoor, and neither one of them have really solidified themselves in that spot. They've got Milton Valenzuela back. Marlon Hairston has been good this season, but he's not a traditional holding midfielder, and I think you're starting to see that over time that there's issues. I mean, you're asking a lot of Derek Etienne. You're asking a lot of Pedro Santos at this point in his career. You know, Barry is scoring goals, but for how much longer can he do that for you? Abubakar Keita has really struggled this year. I think Waylon Francis, Harrison Offal have really struggled defensively. I think it's defending. They're not good enough defensively to get back. And when we look at the East and we look at those teams that we're talking about, I think when you get to this point in the season, defending becomes even more important. And you can go back through MLS history, outside of the very early days when defending was a rumor in Major League Soccer. And I think outside of Seattle in 2019, where they were not great defensively, but had enough to get it done, you're talking about mostly elite defensive teams that win MLS Cup. and get that far. Columbus is not an elite defensive team. I don't think they're even close. I think Atlanta can be an elite defensive team. I think Nashville is an elite defensive team. I think New England is pretty close to an elite defensive team, and they have Matt Turner, who's an elite goalkeeper, especially shot stopper. Orlando's not an elite defensive team, I don't think. I don't think New York City is. I don't think Philadelphia is. D.C. definitely is not. So, you know, Atlanta's got things to do to get there, but it's kind of funny how it's rounding into what we hoped it would be at the start of the season, where they would develop, they would learn, and by the end of the season, they would be a threat in a team you did not want to see in the postseason. They're heading in that direction.
Yeah, it feels that way. That maybe not there yet, but it feels like, as you said, they're headed in the right direction. Shiva's asking about Leagues Cup. Yes, Seattle plays Santos Laguna tonight. Mm-hmm. Seattle was probably the MLS team that took the first round of Leagues Cup the most seriously, which is part of the reason why they're in the semifinals.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big opportunity for them. Now, it's a team in Santos Laguna that I think Seattle and Santos Laguna have actually started a business partnership as well, which is pretty interesting. Pretty weird timing, too, to have that happen right now. But I wanted to see what the odds were on that one, because I'm really curious to see what people think of this game. It's 10 o'clock. Is it on FS1 or 2? No, it's an ESPN Plus game, I think.
It is... Doesn't say.
I think it's ESPN in Seattle. Plus. Yeah, I think ESPN Plus has it. I think it's on TDNA. Seattle's a slight favorite in this, according to the odds I'm seeing. This season, Santos Laguna, they're coming in off of a loss to Tijuana. One win, one loss, three draws since their last Leagues Cup match. So they're beatable. It's a team that Seattle can go in and or can host and beat. They haven't played against one another since 2013. It's been a long time, but Seattle can win this and they can go to the final for sure.
And one more from Michael. He wants to know, if Atlanta United beat Cincinnati and DC this week, do you believe that Atlanta United could finish third in the East? He doesn't think they could overcome Nashville and definitely not New England. You're right. New England's not going to be caught by anyone in the league. I think on points, you probably still could get there on Nashville because right now you're 8 points behind Nashville. I don't know if they have a game in hand or not. So there is enough time to overcome 8 points. I don't see Nashville dropping a ton of points down the stretch. So I'm kind of with Michael. I think third, and Emilio says that's a goal. I agree. I think that's what you're looking at right now. You get third, you're going to be home in the first round. And I think that's got to be... It's not your ceiling, but that's a really respectable goal with where you are right now. If you get a first-round home match, you're going to put yourself in a very good position to be in the conference semifinals. And then, you know, anything can happen. The other thing, too, is if you're third, you are likely not going to have to play New England until the conference finals, which could be a nice little situation to find yourself in as well.
Here's the thing about third. You got to overcome Orlando. You look at their schedule. I'm going to run through it very fast. They host Montreal. They go to Philly. Those are both winnable. They go to New England. Eek. They go to Nashville, back-to-back. Eek. They host D.C. They go to Cincy. They host Montreal. They host New England. They go to Columbus. They host Nashville, and they finish at Montreal. They got four games against Nashville and New England left. So if you're looking at third,
three against Montreal, and Montreal, I think, could probably get 4 points out of those. So, yeah, I mean, there's a window.
If you're looking at third, that's why you can get to third, is what Orlando has left versus what Atlanta has left. It is possible. I think it would stretch the, I think, ceiling on what I think realistically we can expect in points for Atlanta, because you're probably going to drop points at home out of one of your last home games just because it's hard to be perfect and win every game. You're probably not going to pick up a point in every game on the road, although maybe you pick up a win and overcome that. I'm not sure. There's going to be points dropped. You're not going to pick up every point left. That's not going to happen. If that does, then, yeah, they'll be third. I think fourth is the one that feels the most realistic based off the schedule and based off the competition. And even that's not a gimme. But you look at that Orlando schedule and you start to think, all right, if Atlanta picks up 24 out of 33 points, which I don't think is a crazy expectation. Like, that's my ceiling, is 24 points out of what's left. If you get that, third's in play.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's 8 wins. Look, I think these next two are winnable. I think your road match at Toronto is winnable. Your road match at Cincinnati could be winnable. It's on decision day, so that becomes a little tricky. But if Cincinnati has nothing to play for, you aren't worried about it.
They'll have nothing.
I think your road match at Red Bull is certainly winnable. Yep. Then you're looking at Miami home, could be tough, but a match you should win. New York City home, tough, but a match you should win. Montreal road, I think, is very tough, but a match where I think you can get a result. Yeah, I mean, that's going to get you close to 24 points. So it's doable.
It's doable. Totally doable. It's doable. It's going to be tough. All right, you guys, get to your games for Champions League. Barcelona and Bayern are about to kick off along with everything else. How can people listen to us tomorrow?
92.9 The Game, Odyssey app, Atlanta United app, 6:30 for the pregame show.
Excelente. Enjoy the rest of the soccer today. You got MLS games tonight, too, and there's some really interesting ones on the docket. We'll go through that in our pregame tomorrow and get you ready for a big opportunity to put pressure on the teams ahead of you tomorrow with a very winnable game against Cincinnati. Whew. Games are coming fast. See what this looks like. Hopefully with more goals for Atlanta. Y'all have a good rest of the day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.